MRAP Breaking News.
This week for our update, I've got Joe Habush, CEO of MD Calc, and Eric Steinberg, PD of the EM residency at St. Joe's in Patterson, and the ASEP liaison to MD Calc, to discuss some of the decision tools that might help clinicians in the current COVID-19 pandemic. Eric, welcome to MRAP, and Joe, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Swami.
Thank you for having us here.
Let's get some of the disclaimers out up front. Most of the time when we go over to MD Calc and we look at some of the clinical decision tools, they are derived, they are studied, they are externally validated. Do we have a similar rigorous level of data for the COVID-19 tools?
It really depends. Some of these tools are well validated in typically other types of diseases, but not necessarily COVID-19. And so we're trying to adapt them to this crisis. And others aren't even well validated, but we still think they may be valuable here. So please, this is very different from what we normally do, but we feel the need to do this because these tools may be valuable in the coming weeks for practicing physicians.
So Joe and Eric, we deal with patients with pneumonia all the time. We don't admit all of them. Many of them are able to go home. What are the risk factors for COVID-19 that predict poorer outcomes, and how do these maybe differ from our run-of-the-mill pneumonia?
Yeah, that's a great question. And in general, the predictors of mortality in community-acquired pneumonia also seem to be the same that predict mortality in COVID-19 pneumonia. So when we compare the cohorts of community-acquired pneumonia to the large Chinese cohort of over 44,000 COVID-19 patients, we're noticing some key differences. For one, age over 60 is a risk factor for mortality in CAP, but a considerably stronger one in COVID-19 patients with an odds ratio of 9.9. Other risk factors that also seem to have a higher risk in COVID-19 patients than in CAP patients are the presence of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, and lung disease. And lastly, a low lymphocyte count is also correlated with a considerably higher mortality, with an odds ratio of 8.8. So in short, an advanced age, presence of comorbidities, and a low lymphocyte count seem to really carry the greatest weight in terms of predicting mortality.
And I want to emphasize how much age is a factor here. Like Eric said, normally age over 60 has an odds ratio of about 5. You're 5 times as likely to die with bacterial pneumonia than if you're under 60. But in COVID-19, in the Chinese cohort, it was about a 10 odds ratio, twice as much. And in the South Korea cohort, which again tested a lot more patients, so our denominator is much better, the odds ratio may be up to 30 or even more. So no matter what we're looking at here, almost all of these tools will probably underestimate the importance of old age.
Let's get to some of those tools. We do have a lot of different instruments that look at pneumonia severity, again, factoring in those odds ratios, risk stratifying patients for bad outcomes. Can we apply those same decision instruments in COVID-19?
Yeah, I think in general, the answer seems to be yes. Again, the predictors of mortality in CAP seem to be the same predictors of mortality in COVID-19 with a few big caveats.
One important thing to take into account when we look at these different decision instruments is the fact that they didn't specifically differentiate between viral pneumonia and bacterial pneumonia. They defined pneumonia, they included any patients that met those definitions, but they didn't differentiate by the causative organism.
Neither the CURB-65 or the PSI port studies differentiated between viral and bacterial pathogens as a cause for the pneumonia, although the incidence of viral-associated community-acquired pneumonia may be as high as 29%. So with that being said, a substantial proportion of all these patients that had CAP very well could have had a viral cause for their lower respiratory infection. So we can see how the same risk factors for mortality can overlap between CAP patients and COVID-19 patients.
And when you compare CURB 65 versus PSI, this is an age-old discussion of which of those scores to look at. When you're considering it with COVID-19 patients, it seems like PSI may fit COVID-19 patients a bit better because it weighs in comorbidities more and age more. We recommend in the end that PSI might be a bit better than CURB 65. But there's this additional new score called the Mobista score, which recently was developed. It has not yet been externally validated. In a normal scenario, we would not publish this score. But it's interesting. It came out just a few months ago. It's specifically for viral pneumonia. It was studied in China. And some of the inputs include the same things we see in COVID-19. Multilobar infiltrates, low lymphocyte counts, smoking history, and advanced age. But even that score probably underestimates the value or importance of old age.
the decision to admit the patient versus discharge the patient is obviously important, but then we also have to think about, where am I going to admit the patient to? Should this patient go to the ICU? Do they need to have an intubation before they leave the emergency department? And much of this is really going to be based on our clinician gestalt, our looking at the patient, determining what their respiratory rate is, their hypoxia, their level of hypoxia, how much supplemental oxygen they need. But are there clinical decision tools that can also help guide us here?
What we do know is that for patients who present to the emergency department with severe community-acquired pneumonia, delayed admission to the ICU is associated with higher mortality. So we can see how the importance of this decision for COVID-19 patients is magnified, considering the potential severity of the disease, while having to take resource utilization into account. In addition, the decision to intubate now becomes even more high stakes, as it's an aerosolizing procedure that may put ourselves or our colleagues at risk. And there are two clinical decision aids in particular that can help us make these decisions.
These tools don't necessarily replace your clinical gestalt. They are used to predict patients who may decompensate later on in their course and might actually need a higher level of care. So these are predictive tools that can add to your clinician gestalt.
There are two clinical decision aids that can help us with these decisions, SmartCop and SCAP. And they're likely the most valuable to us in the ED, as they are designed to predict which patients with community-acquired pneumonia require intensive respiratory or vasopressor support or just need the ICU. And it uses readily available information such as vital signs, lab values, ABG parameters, and radiographic findings, and both scores are over 90% sensitive in identifying which patients need ICU-level care.
In addition to making these decisions, which patients are going to need the ICU down the line, even if they look okay in front of us, we also have to think about some of the more advanced critical care needs that these patients might have. Respiratory failure, ARDS, refractory hypoxemia, and one of the things that we have to look at as a possible modality to rescue these patients that are really sick is ECMO. A lot of us can't do ECMO in our hospital, but we do have an ECMO receiving center in our system, and we need to know which patients might be eligible to go for that as well, especially because many of these patients are single system dysfunction, which is pretty much the perfect patient to consider for ECMO. Joe, do we have any tools that can help us determine which patients are going to be right for this intervention?
We do, and there's actually two types of questions we can ask when thinking about ECMO. Who qualifies from ECMO is the first question on your mind. And there's a main score for that called the Murray score. It was created for this purpose, and it's the main score in one of the biggest RCTs in ECMO called the CSER trial. Now, the other question we may be forced to think about as we have more and more patients who may require ECMO and less resources is to figure out which patient, if we have several patients who qualify, we should send to have ECMO. And this is those disaster scenarios that we all fear, but we know we may have to face when we just don't have enough resources for all the sick patients. So there's two scores out there that try to estimate if a patient goes on ECMO, their chances of living. And in that way, you can try to figure out which of several patients may have the most benefit out of ECMO. And there's two scores out there, but the best of the two is the RESP score. It actually is validated better than the other score, the preset score.
So we do have some nice scores to tell us who is eligible for ECMO and then how they'll do on that ECMO. Some of this is going to be decided, obviously, with the ECMO team at whichever site you're going to be sending them to. But if you're doing that in your shop, then these are good to have on hand as well. Joe, let's talk a little bit about how we determine that we're in that situation where we actually have to ration this care. Are there some standards that are out there for us to use and say we're at that point where we really have to be thinking, is this the right patient? Are they going to be able to recover?
Yes. So these we call the crisis standards of care. And one of the co-authors of this piece is Dr. Jerome Lee. He's an EM crit care physician up at MGH, Harvard, and runs one of the ICUs and is involved in helping create their crisis standards of care. And those are those terrible scenarios when we don't have enough resources for all the patients. We don't have enough ventilators or ICU beds or ECMO machines. And hopefully we don't have to meet that situation, but we all know that that may be the case. And so there's a few things we should think about when we do crisis standards of care. First of all, hospitals should be thinking about it now because we might be facing that in a few weeks or a few months. So they should be setting up these standards ahead of time. Number two is, most standards include the concept that the practicing physician shouldn't be the one making the decision, but someone else outside the room, because it's too psychologically damaging for that physician and they can have PTSD from it. Now, there are a few scores that may help figure out the chances of a patient living or dying, and that might help as one of many inputs into this decision making. And a couple of those scores that have been looked at, one is the RESP score, and as far as the chances of surviving when you're on ECMO. And other scores include the SOFA score. And so some folks say, look at a score of 11 or more, while really you should just look at it within the context of your particular situation. And the Charlson Comorbidity Index has also been looked at recently.
So you guys mentioned a bunch of different tools here, whether we're talking about, is the patient at a higher risk of mortality, looking at things like PSI and PORT and CURB 65, if they are at a higher risk of needing critical care, or if they are going to actually be qualifying for ECMO. When we get all of these different decision instruments out there, it can be hard to remember, but fortunately, you guys have built a COVID-19 resource center on MDCalc. So people can go to MDCalc. You can see this. It's going to be at the top of every page on MDCalc, so people can link to it very easily. And it's going to give all of the links to all of these decision instruments, so it can help to support those decisions that you have to make. And of course, we're going to drop a link to this resource center in our show notes. So people can look at our show notes, grab that link and go over, or you can just search MDCalc and then find the link at the top of your page. Joe and Eric, thank you guys so much for providing all of these tools for us. I know you guys are also working on the front lines and taking care of patients. For you to also be able to put this together is really great, really good for helping to support all of our colleagues out there that are dealing with this in real time.
Thanks so much, Swami. And if I can just mention, we are so busy at MDCalc trying to push out great evidence-based clinical decision tools, et cetera, and we are growing our team. So if folks are interested in helping us, from physicians, contributors, to programmers, to folks who can help us integrate our new EHR integrations, we'd love to have more of those out there because it would help in these scenarios. Please email us.